I think that I have a relationship with this family and this business that because I receive so much from it, that I want that for my children.
Hi, I'm Luke Hanson McDonald, and welcome to Beyond the Family Business. Welcome back to part two of a two-part interview with Leslie Bishop, member of the prolific business family, the Jodrys, and chair of her family assembly. Leslie is a wealth of family office knowledge. Today, we get into much more of her own personal journey working outside and inside the family business, as well what she hopes for her family and her children in the future. Enjoy. In our first discussion, you were talking about how you sort of had reverse nepotism in the family, which is an interesting phrase. I don't know if I've ever heard that before, but what did you want as a kid? Did you want to be in the business, or did you want to do your own thing, or what were your dreams, I guess?
That's a good question. I was brought up in a family where the message was, listen to what brings you energy, or what is your passion, or what do you love, or and whatever that is, follow that.
Mm.
And I'm not sure everyone has had that opportunity to get that message. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think I still live that way. It's kind of, you know, is this bringing me joy? Does this give me energy, or is it draining my energy?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about, you know, regular work, because there's always work you have to do that you don't really like to do, but mm-hmm. It's the essence of it. Do I feel that I'm filling up this or fulfilling my purpose,
yep.
if you want to say. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that speaks to your guiding principle of where you wanted to go. So is it fair to say you didn't necessarily care if you were in the business or not? It just, as long as you had that purpose or that, you know, that energy, so to speak?
Yeah, I think there were ebbs and flows. When I was really little, I was fascinated with my dad coming home from work. I would immediately, you know, I liked the smell of his suit because it was from the paper mill, so I could smell the paper on it. You know, his briefcase, which he still has from back then, you know, was heavy and filled with files. You know, I loved the sound when he clicked it open.
Yeah.
So I had this fascination with what he did. When I got older, he would take me on business trips. So at one point we had a frozen food company,
mm-hmm.
and so he said, you want to come with me on, you know, on this trip? And so I got to see how, you know, frozen vegetables were made. And so I was always fascinated with what he did, whether or not I knew to say, oh, I want to be part of a family business. I don't think that was ever there.
Sure.
I think I was just always part of a family business.
For sure.
Without working in it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's the, I laughed when you said the thing about the smell of the pulp mill.
Yeah.
Is I grew up around seafood, and a smell that most people probably wouldn't think is desirable. It's crazy. Even when I walk into a seafood restaurant, or especially like a retail store, like a place that sells, you know, fresh fish and stuff, the smell it takes me back to my childhood immediately. And it's such a positive, you know, and, you know, my wife will smell and be like, oh my God, it smells terrible. But it's strange how that happens.
Well, I can beat you on that one. We have recycling plants. And so when I go into the recycling plants, it would smell probably worse than seafood plants, maybe. I don't know. I mean, we could do a test.
Yeah.
But still, I also have them like this is really brilliant. The emotion that that I notice is pride, actually.
Yeah.
And excitement.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, an eagerness around what's actually happening here.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny how that happens. I don't know if my children's dirty diapers is going to be a smell I later on, you know, look back at fondly,
yes,
but
yeah.
Hopefully. And where did you go to school?
So I'm still going to school. So I'm a lifelong learner. It came from, you know, my parents who said, you know, go to school, keep learning, you know, keep asking questions, figure out the answers. And so I have multiple degrees from multiple universities. I eventually settled on, I remember a conversation with my dad, and I said, I don't know what my first degree, I don't know what I want to do for the rest of my life. And he said, well, you don't have to. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know that. And I said, well, what if I make the wrong decision? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, then you just make another decision. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've just continued to make more and more decisions. Yeah. I continue to go back to school. So I did my undergrad. I eventually went to communications school. I did a degree in public relations. Mm-hmm. And then worked my way through. When I had my first job, I moved to Toronto, as we do in, you know, Atlantic Canada. You know, you go away, yeah, you know, with the intention of coming home. And I was there for 10 years. I immediately got a job after my degree and worked in the agency world, servicing clients in marketing, PR, communications, mm-hmm, and then moved client side eventually to work in investor relations for, at the time, it was called an e-commerce integrator, which it really was just learning, you know, doing business online, making money on a website,
cool,
which everyone does now, but no one did it back then. And then rode out that .com crash, and at that point came back to Nova Scotia with this experience of creating communication plans and working with investors and bringing a company public, and coming back to Nova Scotia with my son at the time, and then ended up having three more babies and wow, or two more babies, and continued my education.
Yeah.
And I had a real interest in groups. So after, you know, the communication is one thing, but it was, you know, I could tell you one thing and really listen to you one on one, which I highly value, and I love the intimacy of that. Mm-hmm. But then what happens when we add one more person, mm-hmm, and then three more people, mm-hmm, and how do we work with the group energy? And so I went back to school and did what was like a master's program in facilitation. Which then helped me sit around an assembly table.
So let's say of 18 people.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow. I mean, back to your original point when I asked you, you know, did you want to work in the family business? Your guiding principle was, as long as it was, you know, filling up that good energy or you know, filling your purpose, mm-hmm, it's, or maybe not even ironic, I guess it makes sense that, you know, this path you've gone on of continuous education has ultimately led you to having the perfect training, you know, investor relations and facilitation and working with groups. You're the perfect person to be in the role you're in within your family.
That's what my mom says.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I think she's right.
And that's the thing when I look at the next generation coming, it's like, okay, well, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's like, you know, what advice would you give to that next generation coming through? And it, you know, the first and foremost is what drives you, what's your passion? And then be really clear and transparent about what brings you alive to your family. Mm. Here's what I'm learning, and here's what I really like, and here's what's really cool. And, you know, does that happen in our family business? Or is there a role in there? Or does anyone else do that? Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home from Toronto one summer, I think 3 years into working in communications. And I, you know, I had asked my dad, do we have a VP of communications? Do we have anyone in charge of communications? They're like, oh, no, we don't do that in our business. And I was appalled. It's like, how is that possible? We've been in business this long. And of course, I have the theory, you know, but I didn't have the experience. And of course, I came in really, we need this, and this is what's important for the business. And of course, I could just see my dad, you know, going, listening deeply. We do, you know, and I go back to Toronto, learn a little more.
Yeah, exactly. Regurgitate everything verbatim. I did the exact same thing. So you got to work in the investor relations, PR world or agency world. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah. Loved it. It was hard.
Yeah.
Because you start the lowest of the low, mm-hmm, you know? I was in the photocopier room, you know, 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And And I loved it because nobody knew who I was and I was trying new things and I felt completely insecure doing it around a photocopier. I'm like, what am I doing? And I'm going to make a mistake. And so I, because of those opportunities to start, you know, at an entry level and then be recognized for the work that I was doing and work my way up and getting promoted to account executive and then running my own programs and having clients of my own and then pitching new clients and bringing new business in, I not only got to see how business cycle works, but I also developed my own, you know, self-esteem around my own capabilities. So I would say that there was a maturity that, that I gained from doing that that was invaluable in coming home.
Absolutely. I think, so I'm a big supporter of the idea of the next generation working outside of the family business. I had a entrepreneurial venture first before I joined the family business, and not exactly the same as working at a large agency, but you're right, getting that experience on your own and having to be accountable on your own and whatnot is so valuable, and it teaches you to be quite humble, I think, and appreciate, you know, your team members, appreciate what your strengths are and your weaknesses are, et cetera. So I think that makes a great deal of sense. So I think it's pretty obvious that that experience did have a lot of value when you rejoined the family business. What was that like when you first decided to actually, you know, rejoin and get back involved with the family business at, in your current role, or what was the first role, I guess, you took in the family business?
I volunteered. It was around the assembly table, and we had had other family members step into the role of chair. And I think I said, you know, there was always a question, you know, what are my strengths and what can I contribute? In as little or as much. And so I think my first, I mean, I had worked in the family business when I was younger, you know, in different parts of the organization. But when it came down to the governance and within the shareholder group, I said, I'm really passionate about communication and transparency and how to word things and how to make sure that everyone understands what's being said. Because it's kind of easy to put all kinds of things down and assume that everybody knows what that means. But my, you know, my background allowed me just to check in with people and be like, you know, is this wording right? Or does this land for you? Or does it have any meaning for you whatsoever? So I stepped in as communications and did a lot of the emailing and work around bringing family together and setting up the meetings and taking the minutes and making sure we had a record of the conversations. So I kind of stepped in that way.
How was that received by the family when you first got involved?
It's one of the things I love about being a family business is that we can see each other's strengths so clearly and we can see each other's weaknesses even more clear. And so I think I was so excited to be a part of it and I wanted to share so much that I probably wasn't as nuanced as I could have been in figuring out, you know, nobody wants to meet every 4 weeks, Leslie, or they don't, too many emails were sent out. So, you know, I'm still learning that actually. But I think, so it was received well because we have a very kind family. I mean, we're very gentle with each other generally. That's our culture. People who were in business with my great grandfather would have said the same thing. We value politeness. You know, and that can be a weakness sometimes. Things don't get said. I think we're getting better. You know, back to our conflict conversation. But I think because we set the framework and we needed each other so desperately to make it work that we were quite forgiving as well.
Well, and I'm sure for your family, just as I'm sure you're happy when you see new family members step up and say, hey, I'd love to be involved. You know, like with any new role, you're going to have bumps and bruises as you figure it out. but I'm sure your family overall must have seen your passion and just been so happy to have, first of all, taking on a role that not everybody wants to do.
I mean, that's true.
That can be a thankless role, and it's absolutely can be a headache trying to communicate with 18 people and coordinate schedules. And, you know, it takes a special kind of person to want to do that well.
Yeah.
There's people that would do it, but maybe wouldn't actually care about how well they do it. And obviously you do. So I would have to assume your family must, you know, have been very appreciative of that and saw the value immediately of having a person who is passionate about this.
It's true. It's true. And the family has been really good at giving feedback and saying, you know, thank you so much. I know it's a lot of work, or we really appreciate how much effort you put in. We have, the assembly has 2 meetings a year for the full group, and it's full days from 8:30 in the morning until 5:30, you know, at night. And we have to, you know, members have to get childcare, and the executive team, myself, we really put a lot of effort into planning those things out. And we do, very appreciative, the family is, you know, and a lot of thanks come my way. So I'm pretty lucky that way.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So the reverse nepotism thing I find interesting, because I had a very sort of similar experience when I was younger, which was my parents, you know, they were not typical entrepreneurs. You know, they were very, my mom's an artist, my dad was a hippie, you know, very, very, they want me and my brother to enjoy our lives. And so that message always came across that you need to do, you know, my mom was an artist and is still a wonderful artist. And so she knew firsthand, like, business isn't for everybody. You got to figure out what works for you. But ironically, that expectation, and I discussed this in one of my other interviews, sometimes can turn into almost like, no, you do your own thing. And there isn't that pull into the family business. And now eventually I did get pulled in, but I often wonder, like, you know, for me, I love business. And maybe I would have loved to have been, you know, pulled into the business when I was 18, straight out of school. And you know, literally that could have been my whole life.
Yeah.
Again, I'm happy I got experience elsewhere, and I'm certainly not regretful, but it's interesting as I hear different people's stories, some where they were forced to do it, some where, you know, they were forced not to do it, some where they, like you said, just do what your passions are, et cetera. It often makes me wonder, you know, what do you think is the right choice for your kids? You know, do you want them to be in the business, or do you not care, or how do you strike that balance?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. Such a good question.
What do you think?
I think that if you had asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have had a different answer. Mm-hmm. I think that I have a relationship with this family and this business that, because I receive so much from it, that I want that for my children. Mm-hmm. I want them to see and to feel as proud as I feel, and to understand the history and the legacy and the contribution that we have made, not only to our family, but for the communities and for the world at large. Mm-hmm. And we were in businesses that weren't necessarily the best businesses to be in for the long run, you know, from an environmental point of view. And our generation really started to ask the hard questions and say, well, if we want to keep it going, how do we need to change in order to be in alignment with, mm-hmm. You know, supporting this earth that we're on? Because we do value that. We were brought up in an education system that talked about it. We learned how to recycle. My parents did not. It was taught in school. And so because I've seen such a change in how business, quote unquote, can evolve to have to be impactful for the long term, I would love my children to experience that. So then I ask myself the question, what is it that I really want for them? And really, it's the feeling. So it doesn't have to be in the family business as long as they have that feeling. And maybe I'm taking a bit of what my father said to me for sure, but I know that they could, that I found it in the, in this family business. I love business as well, but I remember when, my middle son, he's currently in first year university, doing, engineering, and he was talking, you know, before he went, he's like, I don't know if I, you know, I want to do that or I want to do business. He's like, business is not really my thing. And I giggle to myself because in my mind, everything is business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, we have this very limited view at a young age of what business is. And it's, you know, I never thought that what I'm doing now would be considered business.
Yep.
So I think we're limited. So for this, what do I want for my kids? I want them to figure out what drives them and to use that to have an impact on the world for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great opportunity
yeah.
for them to do that
yep.
if they so choose. And so my work is to make sure that the systems are in place if they do choose it, that there's a way in
right.
as opposed to you can do that elsewhere, but you can't come back.
Yeah. That is an incredibly eloquent explanation or answer.
Yeah. Ask me in 10 more years. I'll see how it's changed.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head of what I believe as well. I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's especially that part of, you know, how rewarding it was for you and you wish your kids or whatever other family members could have that same rewarding experience. But it's not for everybody and you can't force it. But one of the other interviews I did, I asked a similar question, and this gentleman was also, he was in fourth gen, and he was saying that he really, rather than caring about if they get involved in the business, so to speak, he wants them to add value to the family. Mm-hmm. And that was what he found, like when I asked him what it was, how did he view, what did family mean to him? Very similar to you. It was all about togetherness and whatnot. And that's what he wanted his kids to get. Mm-hmm. And that really resonated with me, which is like contributing to the family. Hopefully it's in the family business, or maybe it's in the family office, or, you know, maybe it's whatever, in some philanthropic effort or whatever it may be. There is something incredibly gratifying about that contribution and getting that, you know, that fulfillment from it.
Absolutely. I just hearing you talk about that, I mean, I even look at, I have a cousin my generation who was not very involved at all in the family assembly, chose not to be, you know, was doing other things in her life. And her contribution now is that she has two children and she's been encouraging them to get involved. And I don't really have a close connection with them yet, although I, you know, saw them when they were younger. But she is having a tremendous impact in bringing them into the family. And I would never have expected that.
Mm-hmm.
So even if one generation is sort of stepped out and is, you know, might not see or a role is as evident, it doesn't mean it's not going to manifest later on.
Absolutely.
And to have the faith in that,
yep.
you know, it's like, oh, I wonder how they're, you know, when, how and when and what they're going to show up with.
Exactly. And to your point, like, look at your story. You've done all these other things and then it somehow trained you to be in this perfect role.
Right.
Or you kept looking for how you're going to add value and eventually you figured it out.
Exactly.
And you can't force that.
Nope.
It has to happen because, again, whatever the family was when you were, you know, 20, fresh out of high school, mm-hmm. I'm sure it was a very different family business than it is today. And that opportunity didn't exist. And now it does. So, like I said, very eloquently put. Not that I expected any different. What has been your biggest challenge rejoining the family business? We've talked a lot about the good side of it, you know, the fulfillment you get from it, your training has worked great for the particular role you have, et cetera. Have you struggled with anything rejoining the family business? Has there been any major challenges you found?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing you know, a course together in governance. And one of the things that, that they're constantly saying to us is, you know, noses in, fingers out. Mm-hmm. And so one of the challenges for me, and I would say for the majority of the shareholders, was trying to figure out how to do that. Like, how do we really have a voice and guide it without being too specific? And so that was a big learning curve for me, and I would say for our family, it's like, hey, so how do we guide? How do we figure out what we want without, you know, saying you now need to do this and this and this? And I think that's one of the challenges. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when working outside of the family business, I was the doer. I saw the vision. I saw the strategy. You know, someone else set the values and the mission, and I implemented it. So it was taking a step back, and holding that view. I think that was challenging. I also think that coming in when we had our formal restructuring, and really seeing that we had some work to do around trust. And you know, and I think I read every single book on trust, you know, and trust in business, you know, cover to cover six times. Mm-hmm. Like, what does this actually mean, and how does it manifest, and how do we implement it, and you know, how do we do that? And of course, none of them covered family business. So, like, if someone's out there that wants to write a book on developing trust in family business, that would be really great. Maybe there is one I don't know about.
Maybe I
could do that. Yeah. So I think that was the challenging part.
Right. Right. No, that's, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Trying to figure out the noses in, fingers out thing. Absolutely, I've gone through that, and it's, how do you give feedback that's meaningful, but you're not micromanaging? Mm-hmm. And you know that. Hopefully, this course we're doing together, you know, further helps to teach me that. But that makes a lot of sense. And your other point, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, that trust element, like there's a big burden as well that, you know, you're the next generation, you want to build back better, so to speak, than, you know, maybe what you thought things were at that stage. And that can put a lot of pressure on you, you know, trying to figure that out on your own.
Yeah. I think thank you for recognizing it, because it's true. It does feel a lot. It feels heavy some days. The thing that does pull me through that is a self-check that I always do is, am I making these decisions or these recommendations or these suggestions for three generations out? If I'm only doing it for me, and if I'm only doing it even for my own kids, I have to question it. But am I actually asking the questions for three or four or five generations? And so if that's true, if it's like we're putting this in place for that, you know, for that, it's really hard to change things in a system with family members, you know, say, for example, terms of service. So terms around the board, terms around the assembly, you know, and hard to change those. But it's like if we implement something that says, you know, good governance says that there are terms and there's a certain amount of time that you need and that you can serve to provide value, and we're going to set those term limits. Whether or not we need to change them now, it doesn't matter to me. I can let go of that fight. Mm-hmm. But what I want is to make sure that in three generations, it's set up in a way where my children's children don't have to argue about it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now I had to write that down. That's a really good point about thinking about that far down the road.
Yeah.
And I definitely sometimes I'm just thinking about my generation or maybe my kids, but
yeah,
thinking about that longevity, definitely. That's a great perspective. So, speaking of kids, you've referenced a couple times that there are now G5s involved. How do you bring them into the family business?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah. So we have two things that we're working with right now. We have a G5 that has just joined our board of directors. So there's an onboarding system set up for the board itself. I guess the question we're holding is, do family board members need a different kind of support when they step onto the board or different onboarding? So we're asking those questions. We have some policies around who gets to sit around the assembly table. So based on age, 21, when you hit 21, you're welcomed on to sit around the table. But our education committee is really focused on, well, age is one thing. And my son, Jackson, got to sit this year around the table.
That must have been cool.
It was so great. It was really neat for his grandparents, really cool for me. Great for him, you know, because he got to see what, you know, what the conversations are. But then I realized, you know, and we all realized that the information is quite overwhelming and he doesn't have any of the background. I mean, he has access to the background and I've shared a little bit. So what do we really need to put in place so that when 21 does hit and they sit around the table, they're not sinking, drowning around it? So how can we arm them with enough information and enough knowledge so that they can start to contribute sooner rather than taking a longer time to become more effective.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. No, that, I mean, that's incredible that you're doing that, because that is, you know, I've at times felt like I learned purely through the sort of jump in the deep end and hopefully I don't break too many things out, you know, or I don't drown.
Yes.
And I've come close to drowning a few times. But it's great to have that more thought out, you know, approach of supporting them and figuring out not only do you give them access, but how do you also translate it, or how do you, you know, give them that support? And it's going to take time no matter what, but I'm sure that will make a huge difference for sure.
And, you know, and we're, you know, we look past is helpful. So we kind of look, okay, we don't want to do it that way. But also there's, you know, and then there's this sort of guinea pig model where, you know, we're going to try it out on you and see. I mean, we, you know, our Isaac, our new board member in G5 is sitting on, and he's tenacious and willing to step on, and he's the youngest. And, you know, the question we hold is, you know, have we prepared him enough to be able to do that right now? And of course, you know, the answer is, of course, we haven't. So, you know, what can we do better the next time? He's kind of like the canary in the coal mine. And you know, hopefully, you know, he'll survive it. And we're really focused on him. So he's kind of really special to us. And it's, we know that we didn't have the systems in place to support him before. He's still saying yes and showing up. He needs extra support from other family members. But we also don't want to repeat that model. So, you know, we have more, you know, my son Jack is coming through. So we want the systems in place to get them ready and be prepared. But I'm very thankful for Isaac's sticking it out.
Yeah. No kidding. And like, you'll learn with each one, right? I mean, your whole family's learning how to do this, right? And it's not going to be perfect the first time. So it sort of is like, it's the gift and the curse of, the gift is you have a very open and transparent family, which is unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, I know a lot of other family businesses, and what you've described is unique. That's excellent. But the curse is you are figuring it out. And, you know, as a result, as people get involved, they're going to be guinea pigs and whatnot. But but the family's there to support them. Like you taking on your role with the family business, they were there to support you as you got used to it, right?
And you'd think, I mean, I noticed myself go, you'd think after 100 years, we would have figured it out by now. And yet it's constantly changing. So of course it's going to, and we see new ways of doing things, and people are trying new, you know, new ways. And of course, being a lifelong learner, it's like, you know, investigating, you know, how do you do that? And now that this person's born, and what does this number look like? And this is the part I love about it. It is always changing. And to your earlier point, you know, a quote, a dear friend of mine says often, if you know one family business, you know one family business.
Yeah, 100%.
So we can only take little parts from each other to survive this thing.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe it, survive. All right. Last question. It's actually two questions. So first, as a parent, what advice would you give to other parents who want to get their children engaged in the family business? Again, not overstepping that bounds necessarily and forcing them, but, you know, to my earlier point, you can sometimes accidentally have, as you said, that reverse nepotism where you might feel like you're not even allowed. So, you know, what advice might you give to a parent that wants to ensure their kids know they can get involved and you know, see if they, you know, can get a taste for it, so to speak.
Mm. I guess the first piece would be, you know, as my sister always says, the G with the B. So to talk about the G with the B, which is the good with the bad. So sometimes some families I heard around the dinner table, they only talked about the bad stuff that was going on, the arguments, the, you know, the problems, the issues. And then other families have talked about, you know, they only said how great the business was and, you know, never really talked about the issues with the cousins or arguments. And so I think, you know, I mean, the theme so far has been this transparency around talking about the business in both ways. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm really loving about it, and here's what's challenging. And then being more intentional about sharing those experiences. So not just randomly around the table, the dinner table, so to speak, which I get the sense that not everyone's, you know, it gets harder to do as your kids get older as well.
Sure.
But being more intentional about talking about it. So I sort of break it down into bite-sized pieces and saying, today I did this, and this is why it was so good, and here's the problem we're facing.
Hmm.
Do you have any thoughts? Have you talked about that at school, or do you have any ideas, or what, you know, and just that,
yeah,
and then done.
That's great.
And then sprinkling that through, I think is helpful.
Yeah. No, that's incredible advice. I think that, because you're right, often just by virtue of you come home from work, you're going to talk about the negatives sometimes just because you want to vent.
Mm-hmm.
But to the people that aren't seeing the positives, that gives a very distorted view of how things are going. So,
which then affects the culture. So it's
absolutely.
Like, you know, I have a cousin whose, you know, father, you didn't talk very highly about it, but it was very successful. He was very successful. And he didn't have any excitement around being a part of the family business.
Mm-hmm.
And so that plays, we have to be really careful. You know, children are listening to everything,
yeah,
and sensing into everything.
Yeah. I have a 3-year-old and I'm starting to learn that. So the other part of the same question. So you've been a parent, but you've also been the child, you know, getting engaged in it. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you have for next generation family members that maybe are interested in getting in the family business? And how do you think they should start, or what should they do to explore that path?
Yeah. You know, it's getting at the risk of repeating myself. It's really trust yourself to, you know, feel what you're really attracted to, what really interests you. Get really good at it and be transparent around what you're good at. Talk about it with your family. You know, I'm doing communications. I really like this part. Do we have a crisis management? But, you know, it's like, I'm wondering about, does that happen? And to talk about it with the family business leaders that you're exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
If your father isn't involved or your mother isn't involved, then call your aunt or, you know, and start to develop those relationships. And this is not asking for a job. It's just saying, here's what I'm learning. Is that part of what we do?
Mm.
And then one day the opportunity will show up and say, you know, that kid has been doing some really good work around there. Maybe they could come in on this committee.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always an opportunity, but there has to be a conversation that exists before, or else the opportunity doesn't pop its head up.
That is perfectly put.
Great.
Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure talking to you.
Really?
Thanks for the great question.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it. I'm Luke Hanson McDonald. This was Beyond the Family Business. Please review and subscribe. Thank you very much. Talk to you next time.